are now listening to the Serious Growth Podcast with your host, Leo Costa Jr.
Hey, Drew, I have a question for you. First of all, where are you from?
Originally San Diego, but I currently live in Salt Lake City, Utah.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
What made you decide to go to Salt Lake, Utah?
My ex-wife, her family was from here, and we moved here in 2009, so I've been here ever since.
And how do you like it?
You know what's grown on me? It's actually really beautiful. At first, I was like
That's a good answer.
It's such a weird place, but man, it's beautiful. It's very beautiful.
Yeah. I've been through there, but I've never spent too much time, but I think your answer was a good one. How long have you been there?
About 10 years now.
Oh, it took you that long for it to grow on you?
Well, it grew on me once I started having kids.
I realized
this is such a good place to raise kids. It's very affordable, cost of living, very safe, family-friendly environment, and a beautiful outdoors. The mountains are just like right here in my backyard. So
yeah, that means something, you know.
Yeah.
Do they have like the seasons there? Is it pretty harsh in the winter?
It's not too harsh. I used to live in Chicago, and I'll take these winters over the negative 20 wind chill
from
Chicago any day. You know, usually it's like 20s on the low end, 30s.
Yeah.
You know, which isn't too bad especially compared to the Midwest.
Yeah, it's all relative, right?
Yeah.
But like when you're coming from California, I'm thinking where you're living is pretty cold.
Yeah, for sure. But I went from San Diego to Virginia to Brazil, actually, for a couple of years.
Oh,
and then to Utah, California, back to Virginia, Hawaii, and Utah. So I've been all over the place. Yeah.
What took you to Brazil?
I used to be religious back in the day. I was raised in a very religious culture in my family, and I served a mission for my church. And so I was there for 2 years from the 2000 to 2002. So it was a really cool experience to have as a teenager. I became fluent in Portuguese, learned a lot about the people, the culture. It was awesome.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that because I'm Portuguese, but I speak your more European Portuguese. That's Brazilian Portuguese, a lot different.
It's a lot different. I'm actually part Portuguese too, about a quarter Portuguese. So my grandma's full blood from Portugal came to Hawaii, actually.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, I'm part Portuguese as well.
You know, the crazy thing about that is, like, for my family, you know, you learn a certain style of Portuguese when you're raised here in the States, right?
Yeah.
And I had never been to Portugal. In my heyday, I used to compete all over and do seminars, but I never was in Portugal. So one day I decided that I was going to go there.
Yeah.
And I did, and I studied it before I went, I should say. And I tell you what, man, where I was the first time was like near, not too far away. It's in central Portugal, 20 minutes out of Lisbon.
Yeah.
And it was a little town called Costa Caparica. And I go in there thinking I'm going to speak all this Portuguese. And the people looked at me like I was from somewhere else. You know? And at the time, I was training a soccer player who was Portuguese. Mm. And I read that, you know, Portugal was like one of the friendliest places you could go and all that. I'm thinking, what a different experience this was in this little town that I was in, you know. To the point, I called my buddy. I said, what the hell is going on here?
Yeah.
And then what he told me was, he goes, a couple things. He said, the fact that you have your certain type of dialect that you have to begin with, and then they can tell by some of the words that you're using that your family originates from the Azores, and they think of you as a second-class citizen. I said, what?
Wow, yeah, I did not know that.
But the thing is, I grew on them a little bit when I was there. I was there about a week, and, you know, it was fine. And when I went down to southern Portugal, it was like my family was there. And all those people in that particular area, they migrated from the same island in Portugal that my grandparents did. So it was like a totally different experience, kind of was my point. Was it pretty friendly in Brazil?
Brazil was very friendly. They loved Americans down there. For the most part, from where I was in the Northeast, and yeah, they loved Americans and super friendly. I mean, you know, you think, for example, here in the U.S., if a stranger comes to your door, you're not going to invite them in, feed them, talk to them for a couple hours, and then let them go. You've never met them. Out there, it's like, oh, you're from America? Come on in. Like, let me introduce you to my family, my cousins. We'll make some juice. We'll make you some food. Let's hear your message. Very friendly people, for sure. I still haven't been to Portugal, though, so it's on my
bucket. Yeah, interesting how cultures are so different that way.
Yeah, it's awesome to be able to travel, though, and experience different cultures.
Yeah, it is, really. Okay, so I see here that you're I want to get right to this. I see here that you're a New York best-selling author and called Fit to Fat to Fit. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, so I kind of get the idea based on that title, what it's all about, but I'm curious to know, what actually got you to a point where you wrote this book?
So a little bit about my backstory. I grew up in a family of 11 brothers and sisters, and we all played sports. So my background was football and wrestling. And so I was always fit. I was always in shape, and I've never known any differently than that. So in 2009, I became certified as a trainer, personal trainer, started taking on clients, and I couldn't understand why it was so hard for them just to do what I was telling them to do. Like, here's your meal plans. Here's your workouts. You go and you be perfect. You don't make mistakes and you just do it. Why are my clients struggling to stay consistent and put down the junk food and go to the gym? And one of my clients said, you know, Drew, you don't understand how hard it is for you. It's been easy your whole life. But for me, cause he had been overweight his whole life. He's like, for me, it's been hard my whole life. And he's like, you don't really understand the struggles. And so I kind of took that to heart as a trainer. I'm like, you know what? Maybe I need to learn a lesson here as a trainer. So I was thinking of ideas. And it's the weirdest thing. This idea of getting fat on purpose, as crazy as that sounds, it kind of made sense to me. It felt like I was being called to do this crazy experiment. So I decided to do it. So for 6 months, the idea was no exercise. This wasn't like a bodybuilder bulking phase, right? There was zero exercise. Eat a standard American diet for 6 months. And then in hopes to eventually lose the weight in the next 6 months and walk the walk and put my money where my mouth is and show people, like, hey, this is how you lose the weight. So that was the idea in a nutshell. And I did this without knowing it was going to go viral or I would get a book deal or I'd go on all these TV shows like Dr. Oz and Good Morning America. I did it in hopes to help people. And I got lucky as far as the publicity and the notoriety from doing this crazy experiment.
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, because when I started way back when, one of the things that I'm like you, I've been an athlete my whole life ever since I was 8 years old. And so one of the things that I have always done is I've always wanted to learn something myself firsthand. I wanted to know exactly what I was going to be teaching my customers. So I kind of did it in the same way as you did, but just a little bit differently. But because that gave me, as you, I'm sure that you learned, is that firsthand knowledge and the power and to know exactly what it feels like.
Yeah.
And some of the struggle. How far, like when you started, how much were you weighing?
193, about 8.5% body fat was my starting metric.
Pretty lean.
Yeah.
And then how far out did you get in 6 months?
269, 32.5% body fat, I think was my highest.
So dang,
75 pounds in 6 months of pure fat.
You really turned it on, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. It was those, I'm part Polynesian on my dad's side, you know, along with the Portuguese, like we talked about.
Yeah.
Those Polynesian genes kicked in.
That's funny. Hey, I'll tell you what, because, you know, and when I was in my off season, I got up to like 300 pounds, you know, and I was in pretty good shape. I mean, 300 pounds, I was probably around 12, 15% body fat.
Wow.
But I tell you what, as you, I'm sure, found out, It's to lug around an extra weight like you did like that, it's massive, and it really takes its toll on you. You know, everything changes that way.
Everything changes, and this is what the big surprise for me was, and this is why I wrote the book, was because even though this was a physical journey on the outside of what people saw, like the weight gain, the fat gain, it became more of a mental, emotional thing. Because I tell you, if your entire life, you grew up with a certain body type, so for me it was fit, lean, my whole life, that becomes part of your identity. So I was Drew the fit guy. And without that, I didn't know who I was. So I remember freaking out, even just 20 pounds overweight, wanting to go up to strangers that I had never met and explain to them, hey, this isn't really what I look like. This is just an experiment. Go to this website. Here's my before picture. This is the real me, you know, like kind of trying to explain to people that this wasn't me because I was so uncomfortable in these new shoes. And it really humbled me. And that's where the greatest lessons were learned on being able to connect and have more empathy for people that struggle with transformation. And that's what the biggest takeaway was trying to understand what my clients go through and people go through on a mental and emotional level, not so much physical, Not hey, it's change up your macros, reduce your calories, increase your workouts. You know, not manipulating body composition, but the mental and emotional journey that people struggle with. So that's kind of the biggest takeaway I had from this whole experiment.
Okay. And then, so when you decided to go ahead and transform back, what was your strategy? And did you weight train? Give me a kind of a idea what that looks like.
Yeah. So here I was, 75 pounds overweight, first of all. And I've never been in the situation. So I had doubts about, am I going to be stuck like this? You know, what if I can't lose the weight? So my strategy for the next 6 months was kind of interesting. I actually skipped exercise the first 30 days because I wanted to show people the power of nutrition and how important that role is and actually seeing results. So I skipped exercise for the first 30 days and focused just on changing my diet. I went from about 5,000 calories a day of Cinnamon Toast Crunch and Mountain Dew and Hot Pockets and mac and cheese and those highly processed American foods that we love that are affordable here in America to 2,000 calories of real whole food. And even without exercise, the strategy from there was after 30 days of no exercise and just changing my diet, I lost about 20 pounds or so that first month. All my blood work went back to normal levels too. The next 5 months, I had to actually go back into the gym. And that was another humbling part was because I've never been the overweight person at a gym and I didn't realize how uncomfortable it felt until I went through this. But the strategy was 5 days a week, 1 hour workouts max. So usually they were averaged around 30 or 40 minutes. Monday, Wednesday, Friday were a superset lifting session. Tuesdays, Thursdays were high intensity interval training. And I took Saturdays and Sundays off because I wanted to show people, look, this isn't some kind of crazy extreme diet plan where I'm starving myself. I'm working out 3 times a day for 2 hours each workout. Like this is something that busy moms and dads can live as a lifestyle. And I wanted to prove to people that that method can work. And yes, I did get down to 190 pounds, you know, around the same body fat percentage, but with a whole new perspective. And in a nutshell, that was my approach.
Okay. And then what kind of a diet did you follow?
So right now, you know, I'm big into the ketogenic diet. For the past 4.5 years, I've been doing that on and off. But back then, keto wasn't really popular back in 2012. So my approach was more of a paleo-ish approach where I had 5 main meals spread out throughout the day. So, you know, every 3 hours I was eating something. It was more of a high protein, low carb, moderate amount of fat type of approach that works for me. But like I said, now, you know, I have a second book called Complete Keto and I'm big into intermittent fasting and the ketogenic diet for longevity and health purposes. And I love being able to only eat twice a day and feeling full and satisfied and satiated and my brain's a lot sharper. So had I known about keto back then, I probably would have done a keto / intermittent fasting approach. But since it was 2012, my approach was small meals, mostly high protein throughout the day.
Yeah. So are you still following the keto? I know you say you go on and off. Are you still following it for the most part?
Yeah, I would say about 80 to 90% of the time, I'm pretty strict keto. I just love the way my brain feels on keto versus before. Yeah. And I hate having a meal prep. And, you know, I'm dad to 2 daughters and, you know, I have a busy life. And for me, eating less, it works better with my schedule nowadays versus having to pack 6 small meals throughout the day.
Yeah, I know. It's really, you know, as a bodybuilder myself, we were, you know, you're like born and raised on eating 6-7 meals a day, which always annoyed me.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I at the end of the day, I was actually more consistent with eating 4 meals a day than I was at 6 or 7. I just, you know, I was a student of the game, but I just, that many times a day just irritated me. My question for you then is, as a trainer, are you still working as a trainer?
Yeah, my business model is different. I don't work with clients one-on-one. All of my content is digital, so people can access, you know, my ebooks and except for my physical books, people can access my content online.
Okay. Do you have much in the way of contact? Do you engage with them, you know, like phone call or Skype or Zoom or whatever?
I do have a few clients that I'll work one-on-one with. Yes, and we do use Zoom or Skype, and we use like a messaging app to stay in touch, and they could text me any time of the day.
Okay. So when you're dealing with your clients, do you suggest that they go on keto or what is your approach and strategy for them?
That's a good question. I'm a big believer that no matter what diet you use, all the different diets are different tools in our tool belt. right? So we all have these amazing tools, whether it's more of a plant-based approach or keto approach or Atkins or whatever people gravitate to and they feel better on. I recommend doing your research and finding out what tool feels best to you in this moment. And then from there, you can kind of assess or tweak or adjust based on your goals, based on your progress, and based on how you feel. Because here's the thing that I've learned is I think most people's goal is, yes, I want to look a certain way. I want to be 5% body fat and look lean. That's great. But do you feel better? Is your health improving? Are those health markers, the blood tests that you're getting done, are those actually showing that you're getting healthier? Because a lot of people equate physique with health. And I think you can attest to this in the industry. Just because someone is 5% body fat and looks great on stage does not mean they are 100% healthy, right? I think there's a lot of ways to look a certain way, but sometimes health is sacrificed. So I think the majority of the population, their perception is that, hey, I got to look like this Instagram model in order to be healthy. Well, it's not entirely true. Each person's health might look different on, you know, their body versus someone else's body.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this, because, you know, I understand you are giving the people an option, like, to try to make a decision or determination. What makes me feel, I'm your client now.
Yeah.
What makes me feel better? But how about, some people really don't know. They've been on such a bad sort of a cycle and a roller coaster that if I leave that up to me, I might not be making the best choice. And yet as a trainer, you know, we all have our different philosophies, and, you know, mine is this. I mean, I follow different types of diets over the years of being in the sport, and my philosophy for my clients, I have a studio. I'm in my gym now. Of course, we're all pinned up here for a while longer, but what I've learned over the years, Drew, is that if you don't make something that's lifestyle and user-friendly, from my experiences, most people will fail because they go on these, I call them quick fix diets that never work.
Yeah.
They're designed to fail, and you know what I'm talking about. And so how do you get them off that? In other words, all I know, here I'm your client now, all I know is that life. You know, I've been yo-yo dieting forever. I always fail, and I don't know where to start. And yet I'm working with you now.
That's a great question. You know, I think the best diet is the one you can sustain. So it's best to find out, okay, what fits your lifestyle best? If you're a nurse and you work 12-hour shifts and you're go, 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 that approach to that person's diet will be different than your stay-at-home mom that has all day to meal prep and plan her meals, and she cooks meals from scratch. So it's about knowing the client. The other thing I would say is, you know, one of the biggest lessons I took away from Fit to Head Fit is how much of this lifestyle change is mental and emotional for that client, right? So I could give someone the best meal plans, the best macros, you know, the right amount of calories for their body and the right amount of exercise and the right type of exercise to manipulate their body. But unless they know what their emotional triggers are, they're never really going to be consistent on any diet, because they still haven't figured out what is triggering them in those emotional situations where stress levels rise and they gravitate towards the quickest, easiest, tastiest thing that isn't healthy for them. So I like to sit down, really assess their lifestyle, their support system. Who do they have at home to help them along this journey? What foods do they like? What foods don't they like? And then from there, come up with a game plan of like, okay, maybe keto or a modified keto is a good approach for you for 60 days. Let's see if we can do it for 60 days. And then from there, maybe we adjust and lay off of the super low carb approach, because like you mentioned, even for me, I can't stay keto 100% strictly for long periods of time, because I like pancakes. I like pizza and like doing things with my daughters where, you know, I'm not going to be that person that's eating chicken and broccoli at my daughter's birthday party and, you know, skip out on the birthday cake. For me, I like to live in the moment and be present. So for me, it's about finding, okay, what's your happy balance is what I call it. Yeah. How much are you willing to sacrifice, but still be happy with that sacrifice and sustain that level of sacrifice? For some people prepping for a show, their level of sacrifice is huge compared to your average person that just wants to lose, you know, a few pounds and be healthy again. Their happy balance is going to be, okay, I'm willing to sacrifice social situations and really count my macros and calories every single day, weigh my food. They're willing to sacrifice that versus your average person might be able to do it for a season, but they want to find, okay, maybe I'm happy at 15% body fat. That's sustainable. And I can go out and have drinks with my friends on the weekends and not have to count and weigh everything. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Totally. I don't know if you know this, but in 95, have you heard of a guy, doctor by the name of Mauro Di Pasquale?
Oh, that name sounds really familiar.
His most recent books, it's called A Metabolic Diet. Have you heard of The Metabolic Diet?
I don't know the specifics of it.
Okay, I'm working backwards here. I'm getting to my point. Okay, in 1995, I wrote a book with this doctor called The Anabolic Diet. Have you heard of that?
I have heard of the anabolic diet.
Okay. And actually, the anabolic diet is a keto diet. I was doing keto back in 95 when it wasn't sexy.
Yeah.
You know, you're coming at a time where it's keto's a big thing now, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, again, so my question for you is, let's talk about the keto diet. Let's you're putting me on a keto. What's your the breakdown as far as percentages of your keto diet, and why is it that those percentages are what you're telling me here?
Yeah. So in general, this doesn't work for everyone, but it's very bio individual, the keto diet, but usually I put people at 70% fat, 25% protein, 5% carbs. And for the majority of the population, that's going to work. There's going to be some variability as far as, okay, does that really actually get you into a state of ketosis? Because nowadays we have devices where you can prick your finger and test your blood ketone levels to actually prove that you're in a state of ketosis. But generally, if someone's just getting started, like in my book, I'll put people at 70% fat, 25% protein, 5% carbs, try it for 30 days. And then depending on how they feel, depending on their results, we can adjust from there.
Yeah. And what kind of generally when you put in somebody, because the keto diet's pretty drastic compared to what most people you have, and I'm assuming, and I'm sure that you know that you have two different metabolisms, a glucose and free fatty acid.
Yeah.
So do you, you know, when you're telling somebody that they're going to go into keto, the reason why I'm saying this is because so many people over the years, now that I've been in this thing, there's a major variation as far as how people respond when they start slipping their metabolism over to a free fatty acid. So how do you prepare somebody for that? To begin with.
Yeah, that's a good question. So, and this is where I recommend people doing their own research. So before I jumped into keto, I listened to podcasts, reached out to some doctors to come on my podcast, interview them, read a few books to understand what happens on a very basic level when we enter into a state of ketosis. Because a lot of people think this is some new diet that was just invented. Humans have been in and out of ketosis since the beginning of time. It's just how we evolved as a species. There were times of food and times of famine, and sometimes we didn't have food for a week or two, and this is our body's backup system where we can run off of our fat as fuel to be able to survive more than a day without eating carbs, right? And right. So anyways, I tell people do your own research and understand what's happening in your body. So the best way I found that worked for people is the importance of electrolytes. So when people switch over to mostly fat as their source of energy, their body's going to retain less water. And when we retain less water, yeah, you'll lose some weight, but you're going to lose out on some very essential minerals like sodium, potassium, magnesium. So the biggest thing to prevent the keto flu from happening is to replenish those electrolytes, sodium, potassium, magnesium, so that you don't experience those keto flu-like symptoms. Because if you've been running off glucose for 30, 40, 50 years, and now you're trying to tell your body, okay, no more glucose, we're going to shift over to this keto diet and see how that works. Well, guess what? Your body is not efficient yet at using ketones as an energy source for your brain, muscles, and organs. So it's going to take a good week or two or three for some people to really become keto adapted so that their body becomes more efficient at using those ketones as an energy source. And so the biggest thing is patience, electrolytes, replenishing water, and then from there, understanding what foods fit into that category. Because our society here in America has been so focused on carbohydrates for every single meal that we don't really know how to eat a high fat, low carb diet unless we really go out of our way and learn how to eat that way. Because people think it's just butter, bacon, and cheese all day long instead of, you know, a more whole foods approach, which is what I like to see people do, is a whole foods approach instead of all these keto treats that are now available and keto cookies. So those are the biggest things that I would say be aware of, understand that part of it before jumping into keto.
Okay. Have you ever experienced, because you know, one of the things that when you're on a glucose diet, people become very addicted to sugar. Yes. And it's legitimate. You know, I've been told before by doctors, they say that, you know, if we knew then what we know now about sugar, because I'll tell you what happened to me, and I don't know if this ever happened to you or any of your clients, is that it took me about 3 weeks of being on the, in this case, it was an anabolic diet. I call it the high fat diet. I call it what it was.
Yeah.
Because the Atkins diet, the anabolic diet, keto diet, they're the same diets as far as what metabolism they're accessing.
Yeah.
And it took me about 3 weeks, Drew, before I actually broke the addiction of sugar. I mean, it was insane, man. And, you know, and it, even to the point, again, I don't know about you. Now, see, one of the ways that we made because I don't think personally, I don't think the keto diet is friendly enough for most people. I think most people will go on this and they'll hang in there for a while. But I think they start, what I've heard over the years is that they complain about not having the variety to eat, you know, and that seems to be sort of common for most, you know. Look, it's kind of like anything else. And when you have people that are doing a program, whether it be for to get more fit, to get on stage, you know, most people would just not follow through. It's the minority that actually end up following through and stay on it the whole time because they have a different discipline, whatever. Okay.
Yeah.
And, but it was to the point where, the way we made the anabolic diet more user friendly, and it was based on how the physiology works, is that we did what's called a 52 diet. Most people, socialize on the weekends, most people. So what we did in the anabolic diet is Monday through Friday, you're on the keto or the high fat diet. On the weekend, you could go ahead and carb load because we knew that once you were really keto adapted, as you called it, then it took 3 days for your body to switch back over, three consecutive days of eating carbohydrates before your body switched back over to the glucose metabolism. And that right there made it so much more user friendly than that was the issue that Atkins had. Because he had people doing the high fat, or they called it the low carbohydrate diet, because people would, commercially, people's not, at that time especially, they weren't going to buy a diet that was called a high fat diet. They would buy it if you said low carbohydrate diet. That made a difference, but it was, you know what I'm saying. But to be on that type of diet, Atkins diet, day in and day out, it wasn't sustainable. And I'm just wondering now, how do you get around that? Because if you're not doing like what we did, where we had this, where you could actually eat your carbs, you could eat whatever you wanted basically on the weekends, and your body wouldn't flip back over. You'd still be, even though you were carb loading for those 2 days, you were still in a fat metabolism. So it didn't ruin anything like that. It takes longer than that. So how do you get around making it more sustainable for people? And I know I'm just focusing on the keto because you've written a couple of books now on keto. So I want to know how you make it more user friendly.
That's a great question. I actually agree with you on the 52 approach. So in my book, I do talk about, the only difference is I do talk about the importance of that initial keto adaptation phase. And I believe it's around 30 days minimum of being strict to allow your body time to become efficient at using those ketones as fuel sources. And then from there, I like to mess around with what's called the cyclical ketogenic diet, which is more of like a 52 approach, 5 days on, two days off, or maybe 6 days on, 1 day off, whatever fits best for your lifestyle. Yeah. And then for athletes, there's also something called the targeted ketogenic diet. And you've probably messed around with this too, where you stay fat adapted throughout the day, except pre-workout and post-workout. You add in about 20 grams of glucose right before you go lift. And it for you, if you've already been keto adapted for, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 months, your body is still very efficient at using glucose. It still knows how to use that. So you add in that glucose to give you that jet fuel feeling to push yourself during that workout to get the most out of your workout. And then by that time, your body is efficient at switching over. The problem that people think is that they're keto adapted on day one, right? Their body can go from ketones to glucose, and they burn through the glucose, and then boom, they're right in a state of ketosis. I wish that were true. But what I found is that if you stay consistent for at least 30 or 60 days for some people, you're very adapted by that point. And then using carbs strategically for a pre-workout. That kind of approach works really well. It's called the targeted ketogenic diet. And that way people can still have their carbohydrates, get that sick pump that they're trying to have, because some people feel a little bit flat. Bodybuilders, physique guys, they feel a little bit flat without the carbs. This allows them to get that full look and that pump that they're looking for. And then I do like the cyclical ketogenic diet approach, which is the 5-2 approach, for more sustainability. Or if you're trying to put on muscle mass, carbs are great for lifting heavy, putting on muscle mass. I think you know that better than anyone.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I was just curious because I've talked to some keto people, Drew, and you know, they really don't have as much of a command as you do. I mean, I can tell that you're. That's why I'm asking certain questions, because I was on the anabolic diet, and I was on 5 years, and I know, you know, pretty much exactly how that diet works. One of the things I did learn, I don't know if you know, when you start learning how to use the macros and compartmentalize, it's amazing how powerful nutrition can be. And I agree with you on that, you know. And one of the things that I learned when I had those 2 days where I was carb loading, because what I did, I carb loaded extra heavy on the weekends. Now, mind you, I'm competing at this point.
Yeah.
And so I would eat, like during the week, I would eat around, on the average, about 3,000 calories a day. And then on the weekends, I would eat 20,000 calories over the weekend, 10,000 each day. Now, I did that for one reason, was to, when you put that much stress on the body, temporary stress, and this is where, and you mentioned something at the beginning of the show, the sport of bodybuilding is not necessarily a healthy sport. And even though we look great up there and look like a Sandow, you know, we're not in many ways, especially if you're in it for a lot of years like I was, you tear your body up pretty good. But one of the things that I did, the reason why I carb loaded that heavily, was to put a temporary stress on the body. And when you do that, your body secretes natural growth hormone. So part of that reason that I did that was to do that, to secrete that growth hormone. But here's what I learned. When I was eating that many calories, my goodness, I mean, it was a job in itself.
Yeah.
It was a job. But I was lethargic, man. It was painful. I mean, I felt so much worse on the weekend, even though I was eating all the foods that I loved. And there was nothing that was off the table. I mean, there was a McDonald's. It was whatever I wanted, pancakes. But, man, I would be so lethargic. And here's the adjustment that I made. This is when I started learning how to use macros. I learned, because we didn't worry too much about on the weekend protein intake. For 2 days, it was like, don't worry about getting your protein in, even if you're training. Not for 2 days. So what was happening is I was eating so many carbs that I was spiking the body, and I would crash. You can see what I was doing there, right?
Yeah.
And it was so lethargic. So here's what I learned, and it straightened everything out. All I did was start adding fat to my diet on the weekend. So I ate a lot of carbohydrates, but I ate a lot of fat as well, you know, to get to that 10,000 calories. All of a sudden now, and I'm sure that you know this, fat absorbs, it controls sugar in your body. It absorbs it. It makes that sugar release slower. And all of a sudden, I didn't have those ups and downs. But it was just fascinating how that one adjustment changed the whole thing for me, especially as a bodybuilder. I mean, it smoothed it out, and it was a game changer, you know?
Yeah. I can only imagine doing that level of that many calories with high carb and high fat. Yeah. Oh. And it's interesting, you know, that once you learn more about the science of what happens in your body, because here, I think most Americans don't take the time to really learn what happens. We just kind of trust the media, trust the government, like, oh,
right,
here's the food pyramid. I guess that's what we're supposed to eat, without really understanding what's happening in the body when you do that. And, you know, once you understand, you're like, oh, if I had fat with the carbs, it would be less of a sugar spike in my body, which means less of a crash, which means I'm not feeling so lethargic. And it takes time. It takes experience and tweaking some things. And one of the biggest things I've learned, too, is what works for you today might not work for you 5 years from now. So be open to adjusting and changing as you grow older, as you become wiser, as you gain more knowledge, and as your goals change, you know, like you know, you're not trying to put on a bunch of muscle mass like you were back in your 20s, probably.
Right.
And realize that your goals are changed. You're going to change. And therefore your approach has to change. And I see a lot of athletes still eat like an athlete after they've retired, because that's how they've been trained to eat their whole life. And a lot of them gain weight and become very sick and unhealthy after their playing days. So you just have to you know, put the time and effort into researching what is going to fit you best for the long term. So like now I'm big into fasting. I love fasting once a month, 24 hours. Back in the day, I was like, why would I fast? I don't want to lose my gains, right?
Yeah.
But for longevity, anti-aging, I'm getting older. You know, I want to feel better as I get older. You know, I still like a good amount of lean muscle mass, but I'm not trying to go too heavy like I used to back right. in the day. So that's what I'm saying is you're not going to be the same way you are now for the rest of your life. So be open to changing that approach.
Change is a constant, man. And it's so rough for most people to keep on changing. You know, I get it. And I understand how hard that really is. And that's part of, I think you as a coach and a trainer is to be empathetic to that and understand that, you know, and have ways and tools that you can transition people, because they're always fighting change. And it's just part of the human nature. They don't like change. And yet that's, you know, depending, I'm not saying that you need to be changing constantly, but changes at the right time are really powerful, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's where people need guys like you and girls like you and me to help them through that journey, because that's kind of the reasons why they fail. I'm going to tell you something about my experience with intermittent fasting. Mm-hmm. You know, 8 years ago, I had 3 strokes in 3 weeks that paralyzed me.
Wow.
And to be in that state, and especially being in the sport that I was in, you can only imagine how shocking that was. And, you know, you're right about the fact that people need to be responsible for their own results. And that's a hard concept for most people, because they want to take the path that's least traveled. They'd rather just say, okay, I'd rather trust you, Drew. And I'm not saying that you're not worth trusting, because I think you are. Same applies to me. But, you know, if you don't understand, and I don't know if you tell your people this, I tell them, look, if you don't go out and learn this to some degree, I can teach you what needs to be done, but I don't want to be somebody who you're codependent upon me for the rest of your time. My job as a trainer and a coach and a mentor is to make you successful, but you have to be a part of that. And you have to be a part of going out and learning about this kind of stuff, because if you don't, then you have to live with the consequence, good or bad. Right.
Yep.
But anyway, so I did that when I had these strokes, and here's the testament to this intermittent fasting. I never had a hernia or anything like that when I was training, ever. I got a hernia from rehabbing my paralyzed body. So what happened was I had to go repair this thing. Before they would put me under, I had to get a complete physical. I wanted to make sure there weren't any holes in my heart, because if you go under anesthesia, it can kill you, or it can make you have another stroke, right? So I did that. And so what I did from when I got my first test, the doctor said, look, I'm 56 at this point when I did this. The doctor said, look, you're 30% blocked. And I thought, oh, my God, that's horrible. And he said, no, we don't even start addressing the stents and medication until 70% blocked, if you can believe that.
Wow.
And I said, yeah, that's what I said. I go, and being an athlete, I'm competitive, but that wasn't good enough. So what I did is in that next year, is I didn't change my training. I got back to the gym and I rehabbed myself. I mean, it was a full recovery, so I'm good. And but what I did is I started compartmentalizing my diet, and I started doing a fast once a week. And I did that for 1 year, Drew. And I went back to the doctor. So all I did was do one thing so I could really qualify or quantify what I did. I went back and the doctors took those very same tests, and I reversed heart disease by 15% by only adjusting my diet that way.
Wow.
That's how powerful. I mean, I was when I saw that, I mean, the doctors were floored. They're asking me how I did it, which is interesting, you know, but I took it a step further. I do a fast every single day. Yeah. And yep. You say you do it every day now?
I do now. Yeah. It's just because it's become so easy. It's like my
day. It is easy.
Yeah.
It's amazing how easy it is, you know, but it's something that's kind of like the keto. I mean, maybe you agree, maybe not. You got to kind of get used to that way of doing it, you know, yeah. to where you're doing it every day. It takes a little bit to get used to that. But once you do, I know I feel way better. Because on the weekends, I still do my thing. I still do like I did back in the old days. I eat, yeah. you know, I kick it up to about 12,000 over the weekend.
Wow.
And I don't feel quite as, yeah, I don't feel quite as good. But I'm able to maintain the exact shape that I want. But I feel way better when I'm intermittent fasting. I totally agree with you.
Yeah, I agree. And that's the thing I talked about in the beginning a little bit about, you know, this is something that our ancestors, you know, probably went through, because we didn't, in our society, we've always had access to food, right? You live in a first world country, you go to the grocery store, you go to a restaurant, you push a button on your phone, food shows up at your door. You have it whenever you want to. You never really experienced going without, unless you put yourself in that situation, you force yourself to fast. And man, that's that, I think that's one of the best approaches to health and longevity that we can possibly use. And it becomes easy. At first, it's hard for sure. We love eating breakfast. It's the first, you know, we've been brainwashed into thinking that's the most important meal of the day. Right. And we bought into that. And now to change that 30, 40, 50 years later is really hard. But once you do, it becomes so easy just to follow that. Whether you're keto or not, just doing that one thing can make a huge difference in a lot of people's lives.
Yeah, in many ways. I mean, you know, it resets your physiology. It's really good for you, you know, and it's good for your brain.
Yeah.
So I completely agree with you on that. Okay, so where do you go from here now? I mean, I see that you've been on Good Morning America. And so what is it that you, you know, where do you go from here? What's your goals now from this point forward?
Yeah, that's a good question. So ever since I did Fit to Fat to Fit, which was coming up on 10 years now, you know, I've written two books. I actually had two seasons of a TV show where, believe it or not, we actually put trainers through the same process that I went through. Because I do see a disconnect in the fitness industry. I do see a lot of misunderstanding and judgment from both camps of, you know, the fitness models and the physique people over here that they look great, right? But then the people that are overweight and have been overweight their whole life, I feel like there's a lot of judgment, like, oh, stop being lazy. Where's the willpower? Just stop eating the junk food. And I get where people are coming from, because I used to be that person before Fit to Fat to Fit. But my goal is to bring empathy first into an industry where all people talk about is macros and calories and diets and exercise programs. I think that's not what people lack the knowledge of. You can find access to any workout program. You can get supplements, you know, any kind of supplement you want. You can get any kind of diet plan you're looking for. The knowledge is at your fingertips. What people are struggling with is overcoming their mental and emotional challenges, and people not seeing the connection between these traumas or challenges they've had since childhood, probably, where they started coping with food at a young age, and food has become their drug. Just like drug addicts or people have problems with alcohol or other substances, people distract themselves or numb their pain with food. And until you learn how to let that go and release that, and this is the mental emotional journey that I've been talking about, that's where people see true transformation and a true lifestyle change. It's not so much a new diet that they need or a new supplement that's missing in their life or a new exercise. Yeah, that stuff can help. But the real challenge is helping people overcome those mental and emotional hurdles to make it into a lifestyle change. And that's what my hope is with Fit to Fat to Fit. So, you know, I have a podcast now. I have two books that I've written, and I have, you know, all my programs are centered around the mental and emotional side with a twist of, okay, here's this ketogenic diet approach if you want to try that, or here's the cyclical ketogenic diet approach. But most importantly, it's helping people more so on almost like self-help, personal development side with fitness served at the same time.
Yeah, I think you're spot on. I like the direction that you're going in. Listen, wrapping this thing up, would you like to, I mean, you've kind of promoted a little bit about what you're doing, but if there's anything else that you'd like to promote, I mean, feel free to our audience. I think you're one of the good guys in the industry, by the way, because, you know, I've been in it for 100 years, and I've gotten cranky, and, you know, I retired, and I came back because I was pissed off. I was reading Google News, and I'm thinking, what the hell are these guys saying here? You know, it's like, this is not right. And so I had to come out and just start making noise on the podcast. You know, that's why I'm back in the industry. But I can tell in about 4 minutes if somebody's legit, and you're one of the good guys. So, I mean, feel free. If you want to promote something, go for it.
Yeah, super simple. So all of my stuff is branded Fit to Fat to Fit. That's my website. It's my podcast. It's my first book. It's all my social media handles. And that's Fit number two, Fat number two, Fit. But yeah, you know, I appreciate any help, or, you know, if I can keep people provide value for people, I think that's what I'm trying to do, just like you're trying to do, Leo, from all the experience you've had over the years. You know, I think we're a force for good in this world that sometimes things get complicated. It gets more confusing for your average person, because there's these different camps and almost religions, right?
Right.
And, you know, we're the you know, diet becomes a religion, and like, hey, we're the good guys. We have the truth. All these other people are bad and evil. So I'm trying to squash that, and I'm not about that. And so my hope is that people will see that when they see my social media content that I put out there. And we can use our platforms for good, or we can use them for bad. And my hope is to leave a legacy for my daughters to know that their dad is out there doing some good in the world.
Yeah, you are, man. And I really do appreciate you taking the time to come out. I'd like to talk to you off camera here at one point. But again, I really do appreciate you taking the time, and best of luck to you.
Thanks, Leo. Really appreciate it, man.
Right on, man. You take care.
Have a good one.
See ya.
Thanks for listening to the Serious Growth Podcast. For more episodes like the one you just listened to, subscribe to us on your mobile podcast app and leave us a review. If you'd like to reach out, you can find us online at seriousgrowth.com. Until next time, train smart and train hard.